Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a podcast by two dry millennials learning to live their most authentic lives after booze.
This week, we are welcoming Alexandra Zahner, host of the Creating Ripples podcast, a weekly podcast that has over 200 episodes to cultivate community, inspire you in your life, and be a space to elevate those around us. Hello, and thank you for being here, Alex.
Alexandra. Hi, Alex.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here with both of you on the flip side from when I got to interview you both.
Yes. I'm really excited to have Alex on. She interviewed us recently on her podcast, Creating Ripples, and we honestly just wanted to keep talking to her. So we're going to flip the script, get to know a little bit more about Alex. So a little bit about yourself, just like general description. And then if you want to start telling us a little bit about like your relationship with alcohol and where that started.
Yeah, so I'm Alex Zahner, and I, she, her pronouns, and I'm 32 years old. I live in Minnesota, or maybe you can hear my accent, I don't know. And I am a mom of two. I've been sober for 8.5 years, which is like crazy when I think about it. I got sober at 24. I have a puppy named Schmidt. So if you've ever watched New Girl, yes, that's what she's named after. She is a total shithead, but we love her anyway. Yeah, I work in fitness. I'm super passionate about helping other people, just I would say like in life in general, and empowering any human to go after and reach their goals or create a life that feels really authentic to who they are, and helping them feel empowered every step of the way. I do sober coaching, but I kind of like to think of it as like a sober guide. Like I'm just there guiding you, asking you questions, helping you to look inward, reflect, to find your inner strength. Because I think sometimes we just need someone else there to like mirror the things that we're going through and help us get to that next step or level up in our lives to be the person that we want to be. And I think about it as like becoming your favorite version of yourself. Doesn't need to be necessarily the best version, but favorite version of how you want to show up in this one special life that we get to have. Yeah, I think that's a little bit about me. Like they said, I have a podcast. I have been doing it for 2 years. It lights me up. I get to have awesome conversations with people like Kaylee and Katie, which is so fun for me. And love travel, adventure, trying new things, and connecting with other sober people is like a huge passion of mine.
That's so cool. I think I don't want to get this wrong, but you might be the longest sober, like the like highest sobriety date that we've had on the,
the
pod.
Highest sobriety. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, yeah, 24. It was definitely, I got sober before people were getting sober our age, if that makes sense. I wasn't getting sober before people were getting sober. People were getting sober well before my time. But when I got sober, nobody really was talking about it on the internet. Holly Whitaker was on Instagram, and I'm forgetting her name, and then it was the Sober Glow, and it was like the two of them. And I know there's like a new Sober Glow now, but it was a different woman.
Mm-hmm. There's that Sober Glow and then the Sober Glow.
Yes. And so I was following both of them. I can't believe I can't think of what Holly's name was on there, but I found them, followed them, and I was like, oh, like I love that these women are talking about a different way to sobriety, because in my journey, all I had really seen was AA. I had used an inpatient to get sober for myself. I had gone to meetings. It worked for me and what I needed at that time, but I really feel like had I known that there was other people out there trying different modalities, maybe I would have tapped into those sooner. And I started to tap into different forms of community and connection as I've gotten further into my sobriety.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit. I don't actually know this. I don't know anything about you.
I know.
Alex.
So
I feel
exciting.
Like we talked about ourselves last time and I'm like, I want to know everything. Okay. So just my first question, because I think it keeps it simple. Where did your relationship with alcohol start? I mean, there's so many ways that that could go, but whatever that looks like or means for you, I want to hear it.
Mm-hmm. I started drinking in junior high. The first time I drank probably should have been like an indicator of like what was to come for me and my relationship with alcohol. I was in, I believe, 8th grade and really did not know what alcohol was. I just saw older kids doing it. And so me and a group of my girlfriends had like an older sibling buy us alcohol and beer. And it was like, we created and devised like the perfect plan for us to have the best time ever. And we each had a water bottle of like probably like Kharkov cheap ass vodka and beer to chase, because why not? Like, why would you not want to chase vodka with beer? And so little did we know what was going to happen. I remember like sneaking off behind the trees at this party with like my girlfriends and like slowly starting to like feel like that loopiness and like, oh my God, like what's happening? And then I just like don't remember the rest of the night. And I woke up the next morning. I was supposed to sleep at a girlfriend's. I woke up the next morning at home in my own bed. And I was like, what happened here? And I like look down and I'm wearing a hospital bracelet. And I'm like, oh, good. Okay. What happened? And I pulled out like my Nokia phone that had like Snake on it. Yes. And I call my friends where I was supposed to be sleeping. I'm like, what happened last night? They're like, dude, you got so sick. You were throwing up down the driveway. Your parents got called. They brought you to the hospital. You'd already thrown up enough so they didn't have to pump your stomach. But you got hooked up to an IV, and then your parents brought you home. And I was like, great. Okay.
Oh, am I grounded? That would be my first, like, I'm in so much trouble.
Literally, I'm like, oh my God, anxious. What's my story here? What am I going to go say? And I remember, like, going upstairs and, like, talking to my parents, and it was like, the discussion was more about, like, we're just disappointed in you.
Ugh.
And I didn't end up getting grounded, actually. But it was like, okay, you were experimenting. Like, let's not do it again. And I didn't for a few months. But that was kind of how my drinking went. I drank on and off throughout high school. And I would say, like, more often than not, it was putting me in situations that I shouldn't have been in and doing things that I wouldn't normally have done. And that continued with me all the way through college. And that was kind of my turning point of just like being like, okay, this thing that I'm ingesting willingly is making me become somebody that I feel is unrecognizable, but I don't really think people want to be around. I don't want to be associated with my drinking version of myself. I actually had a drinking alter ego, Tay Tay. And Tay Tay would come out and like she was wild and would do a lot of stupid stuff. And I'd have to apologize. I'd have to piece my night back together. I lost a lot of phones. There were a lot of moments where I let myself, family, friends down. I found myself like the next morning lying about where I was, what I was doing, who I was with. And that was just like kind of on repeat for me. Well, I think one thing about my story is a lot of people are like, yeah, I did that. And I still drink. And it's like, that's okay. Like, that's your story. That's your journey. I got to a point where I didn't want that to be my story into my 20s and into my 30s. I wanted something different for myself because I knew that I wanted more for the life that I wanted to build and the person that I wanted to be. And that was when I got to then, you know, that was my rock bottom. Now in my sobriety, I call that my pivot point, because I think we have this view upon the rock bottom in our culture, which sometimes makes people feel like, well, I haven't gotten that low yet. So I'm going to keep on keeping on. And I like to talk about it as a pivot point because I think that empowers people to make a decision to reevaluate their relationship with alcohol before they get to the bottom of the bottom and decide, you know, I've had enough. This doesn't have to continue to be part of my story. I want to make a pivot. I want to make a change and feel empowered to do so, because I think something that was hard for me sometimes when I would go to AA, I would tell my story and people like, oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah. The pissing contest.
You know, you didn't get a DUI. You didn't get arrested. And it's like, but it was bad for me. Like, I was a horrible person to people. I let myself down. I lied. I fought with people. Like, that was really shitty for me, and I didn't want to keep experiencing that. So for me, like, being able to feel empowered in, like, my story and deciding that I had had enough took me a while to get there. And so that's why I like to tell people, like, you can pivot when you want to pivot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Kay.
Oh, I was just going to say that it's also that looks different to everyone. And it's so funny, like, some people kind of need that external factor, that like getting pulled over in order to start course correcting, and other people don't necessarily. And I think what I'm curious about is if you were to pinpoint some of the things that started to make you feel like, okay, I'm still young, but I have like a semblance of who I am and I'm seeing myself slip away from that.
Yeah. So for me, you know, like I said, I was blacking out, I was lying, and really what were like my big like points of, okay, something needs to change. I tried moderating for a very long time in my relationship with alcohol. I tried like the just beer, no hard liquor, or like only 3 to 4 drinks. And that just didn't work for me. Like I really wanted it to, but it didn't. And I think like, you know, sure, experiment, try out different things, see what happens. It didn't work for me. I kept going down to the same path. And then I had been in a relationship for almost 4 years, ended up blacking out, cheating on that person, telling them the next day, like, I actually don't really remember what happened. I know that I definitely made out with this person and maybe more. And here's the situation. I feel horrible about it. And that was the end of that relationship because we had fought so many times when I was drinking. Mm-hmm. And multiple times I had heard the words like, we would have no problems if you didn't drink. I was like, okay, but I want to be better. But I'm 23. And the thought of not drinking was like impossible. It's like, how do you expect me to not drink when, one, I'm not even hearing you saying like, I won't drink with you. It's like, I want you to change. And I think what was hard was that person also wanted me to find a way to moderate, and I just couldn't.
Yeah.
And then when that relationship ended, I got sober for 30 days and I felt amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's go. But I got to the end of that 30 days and really wanted to try moderating again because it was scary.
Yeah.
Like, never drinking again? Yeah. Like, are you kidding me? I'm 23. I think one of the hardest things too is everybody saw how my drinking was impacting me negatively, but I think nobody really thought about like getting sober. It was like, I want you to figure this out, but like getting sober at 23 seemed wild.
Yeah, that's interesting because it's like, I want you to get sober. I want you to stop making the decisions you're making when you're drinking, but I want you to keep drinking with us.
Yeah. And then when I made the decision, people were supportive, but I think they wanted me to figure, I think everybody was like, I don't know, like probably not drinking, but like, how would that work? We go to the bars every weekend. And like, I'm like, I don't know how it would work. When I did the 30 days, I just like didn't go and really put myself in those situations because mm-hmm. I was just like, I'm going to tap into different things. I dove into yoga, started going back to church, like all these different avenues that I hadn't really been a part of. I had been going to yoga, but I wasn't really like tapping into what it had to offer. I even think like I was doing my 200-hour yoga certification now that I think about it at that time and like the height of my drinking. And then after those 30 days, I went out for 2 weeks. The last night I drank was at a wine night over at a girlfriend's, stopped at a bar on my way home. Didn't make it home, woke up in the hospital, didn't have my phone, didn't have my keys, my purse. Luckily, knew my roommate's phone number, called them, and they came and picked me up from the hospital. We did find my iPhone because I finally had find my iPhone after I lost so many phones. My dad was on his way to pick me up to go visit my grandparents, so I had to call him, tell him what was going on, and he drove me to where my car was, which was the impound lot with a beautiful new dent in it because I had driven it at some point, smashed it, apparently left it in the middle of like a side street, was found passed out in a vestibule of an apartment, and in my car was my phone and my keys and my purse just like sitting in the front seat. And so that for me, like getting behind the wheel and drunk driving was like, nope, this can't happen. Now you're really doing a lot of stupid stuff they shouldn't be doing. And I had driven under the influence before and not gotten caught, which is, I think, like an important thing to speak about because somebody said this to me a few years ago and it really landed. Like, no, I didn't get a DUI, but I probably could have. I probably should have at some point. And I think a lot of people can relate to
that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And something we talk about too is like, it's really, and I don't want to speculate about your like socioeconomic background, but like, it's really easy for the three of us, like middle-class-ish white women in a college age town driving, not getting DUIs. But can you imagine if we didn't play this part in this society? Like, I feel like we have so much privilege to have been as lucky as we were given. Kaylee, I don't think you really drink and drove, I did. Anyways, that's my spiel about that. Yeah.
When I lived at my dad's house after, there was kind of like the downtown area, which was also where like the police station was. And then there was, it's called like Ferry Street Bridge. And then you are kind of in the burbs. And so once I made it over Ferry Street Bridge, I always had this sigh of relief of like, okay,
same.
I made it through the hard part. Now I can get home.
Yeah. Like it was a fucking video game.
It's crazy because no one, unless they have had at least, you know, one DUI before, at least that I know of, has a breathalyzer in their car. It has to be at least 50% that go to any bar. Those people are driving, what is it?
Over the legal limit.
Yeah. Sorry, just a tangent there on how wild it is and you're not alone.
Yeah, I'm like so sorry that that happened to you. That's really fucking traumatic also.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was what needed to happen, mm-hmm. unfortunately. And that's something that I can now like look back on and like speak about and share and hopefully help other people to feel less alone if they've gone through that experience. But when I went through it, was so freaked out to tell people about what had happened because mm-hmm. I just, mm-hmm. I felt a lot of shame, a lot of guilt, embarrassment. Literally woke up that morning at the hospital and then got home and knew what I needed to do. And that was like to commit to not drinking because I'd already tried the moderate eating for so long and it led me right back to where I didn't want to be. Messaged my like close group of girlfriends, hey, I am looking into outpatient treatment. I am going to stop drinking and I'm going to need a lot of support. And that was really scary to tell people and like openly be like, this is what's happening. This is what I'm doing. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know that I'm going to need you all to support me in that journey. Yeah. And I was very lucky to have friends that supported me in that journey. I didn't have to change friendships. I continued friendships with the people that were really my drinking people, which I know that's not very common for a lot of people as they're getting into sobriety. And I think like if I could go back, like maybe I would have done it differently, but I was so young at the time. It was like I was so fearful about losing social opportunities to be around people, to be with my friends, to go out, that like staying in and not drinking was like too much for me to fathom. So mm-hmm. I was willing to kind of put myself in probably what would many consider risky situations mm-hmm. for fear of like that FOMO. And now in my 30s, yeah. living very different lifestyle, just in general, I'm a very different human because I've gotten to know myself better. I actually like having nights in by myself, but at that time I was like the person that always had to be with people. Mm-hmm. So the idea of not drinking and then being home alone, no thank you. Where like now I'm able to see the mindset of like me not drinking and going out with my friends is actually more present than I've ever been, or me choosing to like be sober and stay home is giving me more opportunity to get to know myself. But at the time I was too afraid to like really tap into that energy.
Oh, I can so relate to all of that. We're both reflectors. And there is a correlation between having open centers and addiction. So we are obviously, by human design standards, like the most predisposed to addiction. And then projectors, which is what Kaylee is, has the second most open centers. And so that would put her second in line for that predisposal as well. And I can fucking relate to everything you're saying. I was so codependent before my relationship with alcohol even started. And I feel like through sobriety, it helped heal a lot of that.
Well, I think something too that I've learned a lot about myself is I actually enjoy being alone. And I re-energize that way. But for so long, like the thought of being alone was like the last thing that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And now I cherish those moments. I embrace those moments. I try to find moments where I can be by myself and read or do a meditation. Or like last week, my girlfriend and I, maybe 2 weeks ago, we did like a full moon meditation group. And it's just like finding different things that I enjoy that allow me to slow down, that allow me to reconnect with myself, to get quiet. And that's just been something that over the years of my sobriety, I've started to learn more about myself. Like the beginning year of sobriety was just like, I'm just gonna fucking get through this year.
Yeah.
Like I did things. I went on a trip with my girlfriends for the first time in my first few weeks of sobriety. And then like I went on dates. I started dating. I know that people like tell you not to, but I was like, I was like freshly out of a relationship and newly sober. And
dude.
Just like, you know, I was doing all the things. I like look back at it. I actually was telling some of my girlfriends. So on Tuesdays, started as a sober group. Now it's like my closest group of friends. We call ourselves the Raw Dogs. We're all sober. And I was telling them about my first year of sobriety. And I was like, you guys, I was like going out. I was meeting men. And I was sober. And that's like so funny to think about now. I'm like, what confidence did I have? Like that yeah. I mean, I'm married now, but like, I just can't imagine myself going out and being like very confident in that setting. But maybe I would be. I don't know. It's just like really funny to think about. I'm like,
It's really, honestly, it's really brave of you. I just want to acknowledge you in that because not everyone does that.
Yeah.
Well, I think I was confident, but I was also wanting to like just fill void.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was a little bit of both. It's like, okay, I can go meet some men. I can go do this. I can date. And then I was like, okay, girl, you got to let yourself feel sad.
Yeah.
And then once I like let myself feel the sadness, I was like, okay, like, and I think this is common for a lot of people. We glamorize relationships even when we know that they're not the right person for us. And that's exactly what I was doing. And I think like my drunk self was like, girl, you are not – this is not your person. This is not your person, but you're not going to leave. You're going to stay. You're going to get married. That's what's going to do. Something has to change. And it was like, Tay-Tay was looking out for me in a really fucked up way, but she was. And like, now I can see that. But relationships are hard, and giving yourself the space to grieve what was, even when it wasn't like the perfect relationship, I think is really important. And then also just in sobriety, I think like taking the time and giving yourself the space to get to know yourself is really important. It's really easy. Like that's definitely what I was doing, was I was just like trying to find different things, but I was also like, I was going to outpatient. I was going to AA. I was like getting back into going to church, which I like kind of forgot that I was doing that. Like I would go on Tuesday nights by myself to like a musical worship. And I was like, oh my God, I did do that. Like, I think a part of me was just trying to find out who I was. I'm like, I was the party girl. Who am I now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was looking everywhere to try and figure that out. And it took a while to figure out who she was. But I feel like slowly and slowly I started to realize, like, I'm adventurous. I'm confident. I'm funny. I'm fun. I'm caring. I love people. I love alone time. I like to read. And it's like sobriety is this opportunity to reconnect with who you are and who you were meant to be.
If you know me, you know I'm always drinking 5 NA beverages at one freaking time. So I love having different concoctions to switch things up. That's why Dry Hard Pod partnered with High Street Tonics, a woman-owned, locally crafted range of organic herbal bitters and honey cider vinegar tonics. The restorative tonics support digestion and well-being through their herbal properties, and they make the most amazing mocktails. Use the link in our bio to shop their website and use code DRYHARDPOD for 10% off when you purchase.
As you all know, I'm obsessed with Reframe app. It's the number one alcohol reduction app. It's built to help you drink less. Whether your goal is to cut back or quit entirely, Reframe is life-changing. Daily Zoom support groups, a community forum, and challenges, podcasts, TED Talks, you name it. Over 100 resources are accessible in this app at any given time. You can download Reframe app on iOS, use the 7-day free trial, and use code KATY, Katie, for 10% off your subscription.
Here's Clara.
Hi. For those listening, Alex is solo parenting tonight. It sounds like her husband is out, so she's got a little one. She's gonna help out for a second.
Do you want to say hi? This is Clara.
Hi.
Look at my teeth. I'm very shy.
Oh, you're showing them your teeth?
I'm very sharp.
Really sharp?
Yes.
Oh, can you tell them see you later? Okay, come on.
That's like the most wholesome and adorable thing that we've ever had happen on the show.
Oh, so cute.
She's so cute. Alex, how old are your, you have two kids?
I have two kids. I have a 15-month-old and an almost 3-year-old. Clara's almost 3.
Gosh, that's so exciting.
Yeah. I was just going to say it's been something that I am also very grateful for, to be sober in motherhood, because I see a lot of the wine mommy culture and the targeting of moms and like, kids are so exhausting. How do you unwind? Pour yourself a glass of wine. You've earned it. And it's like the glamorizing of alcohol in parenthood makes me really sad, because yes, parenting is hard.
Yeah.
But I think like teaching moms healthy coping mechanisms is really important. Mm. And knowing that there are other ways that you can treat yourself, or like take a bath, go to meditation, go to a workout class, carve time out for yourself, versus like being like, oh, my kids are so stressful, I'm pouring myself a glass of wine. Or like, I've seen videos on TikTok of moms being like, oh, finally nap time, and like pouring themselves like tequila shots. And like, it just glamorizes it to me. And I get it. It is stressful. It's really hard and challenging and all of the things, but life is challenging and life is hard. And I think the more that we continue to glamorize alcohol, we make it seem like it's okay if you want to get drunk after your kids are going to bed, or if you want to treat yourself after a stressful day with your kids. But we need to like speak about these things to recognize like, it's actually, it would be better to show your kids healthy coping mechanisms, so that as they get older and they start to have stressful days, or they're feeling frustrated, or they're feeling challenged, they feel empowered by what they're seeing you do. Because our kids are always watching, our kids are always listening. But whether you're a mom or not, like, learning healthy coping mechanisms is so, so, so important in life. But we've just glamorized it as like, pour yourself some wine after a hard day at work. And nobody questions it, because it's out on social media. Like, that is such a normalized part of our society of like, oh, stressful day, who wants to go get happy hour? It's like, well, why can't we go do other things when we are stressed out? Why can't we get together and like go rock climb or bouldering or whatever it may be to unwind? Why does it have to always be with alcohol?
Yeah. And I think an important part about this too is like, I read something somewhere, it's like, mommy doesn't need wine. Mommy needs access to therapy and support from the rest of the family. And like, that is so meaningful to me, because what you're doing, Alex, and like, I think the whole sober curious movement or whatever we want to call this, is it's like actively disrupting mommy wine culture, because there will be less and less like adult children of alcoholics if we're not drinking and then we're reproducing. You know, and that is, I think, the like young millennials and Gen Z, a lot of us are the adult children of alcoholics, and we're implementing these changes. And I feel like it has a domino effect, like 100%. Every time I see that shit, I fucking get so mad, and I like report it on TikTok or on Instagram. I always report it.
Shut it down.
It allows us to better show up in our own lives and be there for our children. I just think about it like, when I go out with people and they're drinking and I know that they have to go home to their kids and then they'll wake up hungover tomorrow, I'm like, oh my God, if I'm out late and I'm even not, I mean, I'm obviously not drinking, if I'm out late and then my child comes and gets me up at 6 a.m. on the weekend, I'm like, I can't even fathom having a hangover too. But like, you'll see people posting that content of like, oh, rough night, Advil, Gatorade, like all the things to get through their hungover day with their kids. And it just makes me sad. And I think, I don't know, I just want people to realize like, you can live a really fun, kick-ass and fulfilling life without alcohol. And I'm not trying to make anybody feel shame or guilt if that is the lifestyle that you live. But like, I challenge you to want more for yourself.
Yeah.
And know that you deserve more, but you have to be willing to get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Tuning into sobriety requires you to be uncomfortable. You're doing something new. You're doing something that you've never done before. But I guarantee you, it's in those moments of discomfort, that's where real growth happens. That's where you learn about yourself. That's where you discover who you are and the life that you really want for yourself. I think when we continue to drink, we're living like this mediocre life because we think this is it. We work, 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 work. We have a drink at the end of the day. We unwind, W-I-N-E-D. And then we do it all again. And then we get to the weekend and we're like, who wants to get drinks? Who wants to do a happy hour? And it's like, sure, if that feels good for you, keep on keeping on. But I want to challenge you to try, I'm not going to say 30 days. I think 30 days is a great jumpstart. Try 90 days without drinking, or 30 days if 90 seems like too much. And just like lean into it though. Like don't be like, this bitch on some podcast said, I need to try out switching on my lifestyle to not drink. If you go in as a little curmudgeon, you're going to hate it. Okay. Go in.
And you're going to fail.
Right. Like go in and be curious. Like, okay, this girl's challenging me. I'm going to take her up on this challenge. I'm going to lean in to 30 days, no drinking. I'm going to find an online sober community. I'm going to fill my time that I would normally go to a happy hour to try something that I've been curious about, that I've been interested in, and like lean into it. Be curious, see what your life could look like without alcohol, and you might actually find it's not that bad.
It's tips.
At least that's what I did. Right? Right?
Well, and that's like such a good segue because I want to hear about your life now. So you've been alcohol free for 8.5 years, you said. So what did that look like for you? So after you, you know, had your dating in your first year of sobriety stint and all of that, like what happened after that?
And like, were there any cool milestones? I'll add on, sorry. Were there any cool milestones like beyond where we're at? Because we've only experienced, you know, what 2 years looks like, but I feel like some of the things that you mentioned, I related to a lot, but that you are like a few steps, like just mentally ahead. And you make me really excited to continue to stay sober. So,
yeah, I think what's so cool is, and I know sometimes like sobriety can get painted as like the rainbows and butterflies. There are challenges. Life is challenging. Life will always be challenging, but I'd rather show up for it totally as me without alcohol in my system. And so for me, yeah, that first year, it was really just leaning into like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to not drink. And that was outpatient. That was AA. That was going back to church. And then I met my then boyfriend, like 9 or 10 months sober. And my husband does drink, but he supported me in that journey. And I continue to go to multiple AA meetings a week. I was really involved in yoga, teaching fitness, working out, moving my body, challenging myself, traveling, like just tapping into different things that excited me that I wanted to be doing and filling my time. I mean, I was busy doing a lot of things that brought me joy. I was going out with friends, but I was also staying in and being okay with that. I mean, at my 1 year, so my sobriety day, it's also my birthday. My friends threw me a surprise party, but it was more like a surprise. You hit 1 year. That I think about that a lot because I didn't feel like they noticed my sobriety per se because I was like doing it on my own. But for them to do that for me meant a lot. And I was just like so grateful for them to have done that. And then I kept doing different things that challenged me. I took a leap of faith to start a job that I was unsure of because it was at a startup fitness company. And I don't think that I would have done that had I not gotten sober. My sobriety has constantly reminded me when there is fear about the unknown, because that's how I felt leaning into sobriety. I was tons of fear about the unknown, but then I did it. It's reminded me in moments of like, okay, I'm experiencing fear about this unknown situation, to do it anyways because it might be better, way better than you could have ever imagined. And as I continued in my path of sobriety, like I feel like I wouldn't have the relationship that I have with my husband if I was drinking. Like I think about that all the time. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even imagine how many fights we would have or if we would even be together if I hadn't gotten sober. Like just all these different parts of my life. And then the pandemic hit and everything kind of changed. And so it's hard for me to like really remember. It's funny. I actually found my treatment book the other day and I don't know where I put it, but I like was looking at all of the things that I wrote down about like, what are my goals in life? And it was like, one of my goals was to get to know myself and who I am and what I enjoy doing. And it's like, here I am 8.5 years later. And I'm like, yeah, you did that. And it's just like so cool to be able to see that. And some of the things that I like wrote down about like where I struggled with my drinking and what I wanted for myself and why I wanted this change. And honestly, when the pandemic hit, I had already kind of had this feeling of like AA wasn't really the right fit for me, but I needed community. I love community. I crave connection. And I wasn't really sure where else I was going to find that. And the pandemic kind of served up a great opportunity for me to be willing to tap into virtual opportunities. And in the beginning of 2021, I started a virtual book club where we read Quit Like a Woman.
So good.
And my sobriety, like milestones, I would say in my sobriety are like doing things that I never thought I could or would do. One being in January of 2019, I went to a goal setting event at Lululemon and I wrote down, I want to create community and connection and I want to literally change the world and help people in their lives, guide them and empower them and connect them. And that is where my podcast idea shook out. And that was January 2019. I would have never, ever launched my podcast if I had not gotten sober, because literally AA was what made me want to do my podcast. Because I went into AA and people shared their life stories with total strangers and made people feel less alone and helped them to make changes in their life. And that was what I wanted to do through my podcast. I want to have people come on, share their stories, make a difference, and create ripples into their life so that they are impacted in some way, shape, or form. And it took me almost 2 years from that idea to do it. But it was coming back to that of fear. You have to lean into the unknown. It's going to be better than you can even imagine. Then the book club came. Then I started the Raw Dogs, which then was just like a group of women that I knew that were sober. And we started meeting virtually and we instantly like, this is something super special, and became like best friends. And we do 2 sober sleepovers a year. We literally just lean into each other. We do topic nights when we do virtual. Every other week we'll go in person. We'll just hang out. We'll spend time together. Opportunities have come to me that I never would have had if I hadn't gotten sober. I've gotten to be on podcasts. This last year, 2022, was like,
go ahead. I was going to say, wait, we want to hear about Dr. Phil.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's coming too. I will not forget that. This 2022 was literally the most expansive year for me of like, okay, you're sober. Now what? And it's like, okay, I'm going to help other people that are sober, curious, and make a difference. I started leading workshops. I led my first one-day retreat. I launched a 12-week sober empowerment program, essentially. It's like a life coaching group for other people that are sober, curious, called Wildly Sober. I got the opportunity to go on Dr. Phil, a clip came out today that I was in.
What?
A clip came out today. Oh, it's coming in February. I don't know when. And like, that was like really freaking cool. They found me on TikTok talking about sobriety. I love talking about sobriety on TikTok. I don't have many followers, but it's like cool to get to hear how people can relate to what I'm sharing. I led a retreat in Joshua Tree for sober people where it was 8 women, only like 3 of them kind of knew each other, the rest didn't. And like, we left like so connected and close and grounded. And like, I feel like I'm finally like living out my life's purpose, which is to create connection and show people what is possible in a sober life. And I think those are milestones, like sobriety milestones, of being able to be like, dude, look at all the shit you did and the things that you would have definitely never done had you not gotten sober. Like, those to me are the biggest milestones of, okay, like right now I'm planning more sober retreats because I want to do that. I want people to get out of their comfort zone. Like, going on a trip with 8 strangers, are you kidding me?
Sober.
The fact that, right, sober. That's what I'm saying. Like, you go, I'm sure, yeah, take me to Mexico on an all-inclusive, get fucked up. Great. Like, anybody could do that. Tell me who you know that would go on a retreat for 5 days, 4 nights, no alcohol, just real and raw connection, right? Sober badasses. But somebody that drinks, totally. I don't think I could get them to do that. And mind you, we did make them camp one night in 30-degree weather, which I thought they were going to murder me, but they did it. They survived. Resilience, yeah. Baby.
I was going to say, my retreat was in Kauai, and it was 8 days, and there was no camping in 30-degree weather, but it was super fucking uncomfortable, and this one of the scariest things I've ever done.
But so worth it and expansive.
So worth it.
Right?
Yeah. Like,
we literally all came back, and we talk almost every day. We are like, literally the girls were like, okay, can we go sailing next year in the British Virgin Islands? And I'm like,
yes,
sure.
Yes.
Why not? Let's go.
Yeah. And Katie and Kaylee are going to go.
Yeah. I mean, literally I led a workshop every day, weighted journaling and reflecting every day. Like, it's brought me more opportunities of like, okay, cool. You did that. Now here's another opportunity. I started a new job, which I don't think I ever would have had the guts to do. Like, I was totally happy where I was, but this opportunity that arose was like, you can do more, like you can impact more lives. And I literally had to have a friend say that to me of like, yes, Al, like you are impacting people where you are, but step into this new role and you get to impact and touch even more lives. And I think that's something that I'm constantly reminded of when the fear starts to creep in. Like, I'm not perfect, I don't know it all, but I'm really passionate about helping people to discover what they're capable of, to get outside their comfort zone and like move with the fear. And when I'm reminding myself of that, it's like, okay, this might feel scary, but like you get to impact even more lives when you do it. And that's kind of the biggest milestone, is just continuing to recognize, I love to say, like how wildly capable I am.
Yeah. And when you do things that are scary and out of your comfort zone, every time that you do that and get a positive response, it's literally like rewiring and showing yourself that it's okay. And it's so hard because it's like literally the hardest thing to do. There are some things that I am fighting against so hard. And every time afterwards, whether it be like a hard conversation or wanting to make a change in my life that I don't feel like I'm ready for, I always feel better on the other side. It's just so hard with like that instant gratification versus, but I feel like, at least from this conversation, that it kind of gets easier over, like you just keep doing it and you keep doing it, and then like better and better and better stuff keeps happening. So it's like a rewarding process, although still scary at times, I'm sure.
Totally. I mean, when I was not looking for a job. I got a call about this opportunity. And I sat on it. Literally, I had 3 weeks to decide. I decided at midnight the night before. Mm-hmm. And I almost didn't take it. Like, and then my husband and I sat down and he was like, why wouldn't you? This is an opportunity for you to do something different, to challenge yourself, to try a new opportunity. And if it doesn't work out, you tried and you can always go back to doing something else. And I think like, I still feel fear. I am the person that like has to ask a million other people, like, what should I do? And I'm learning more and more to just like follow my gut, because initially when I got that job offer, I was like, I need to take it. And then I got nervous and I got anxious and I tried the weirdest shit. Like, one of my friends that worked at my old job was like, have you heard of the fall test? And I was like, what? She's like, you close your eyes, you think about the decision. And if you fall forward, I'm maybe butchering this, it's either like, if you fall forward, you do it. And if you fall back, you don't. So I'm like, do I take the job? Do I take the job? And I'm like falling forward. And it's like, you take the job. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing right now? And I finally, actually, I have this woman that's coming on podcast. Her name's Betsy. We got coffee. And I'm like telling her about like how I'm trying to decide. Like, what do you think? And she's like, I am not going to tell you what to do. You mm-hmm. have to decide what to do. It's an inner knowing within yourself. You have to get quiet and you have to listen.
I just have to say this too, because I read this somewhere or heard it or something. It's not even about making the right or the wrong decision. It's just making the decision at all.
That's literally what my friend said. She's like, it can't be a wrong decision. It's not a wrong decision. It's a decision. And then once you made it, your path and your course changes,
mm-hmm.
and you continue on.
And I think about this when we consider that, doesn't it just make things so much more simple that we can make decisions at any time in our lives to change the course of things, regardless of the decision we made before? It's like such a like fresh and beautiful thing to know we can start over at any time too. So I fucking love that. I also wanted to mention, Kaylee, like you said, like doing the hard thing and doing the uncomfortable thing gets easier over time. And I really like to think of it as like a little growing bicep. Like your muscle just gets bigger and bigger every time. And
confidence muscle. It's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does get better. It's still challenging. It's still hard. You might struggle with it, but I do truly think that the more you do it, you're like, oh, I did that. And then the next time you have to decide, you think back on that. I had the job offer and then I made the decision. And then the next day I got asked to be on a live podcast, which was really scary. And I was like, why would you say no? I said yes. Then the next day I got the email for Dr. Phil and I was like really in contemplation. And then I was like, what are you doing? Dude. Obviously you're going to say yes.
Yeah, because like you're getting just feedback like after feedback of like when you're saying yes and you're giving more, getting more and more. Like there's no better sign from the fucking universe than that.
Yeah, and I think that's a reminder of like you lean in, you go in and you start to just believe in yourself. And I think we have this idea of like when we believe in ourselves, like it's going to work out perfectly, and that's not true. Like you can say yes, it can feel like, oh, that was exactly what I was meant to do. But there will be bumps along the way. You will be challenged along the way. I think that's perfectly tied in with sobriety of like, I knew that was what I needed to do. It's also the hardest thing that I've ever had to do. And I am constantly reminded, like, I am going against the grain. I am going against what we as a society and culture believe. I mean, my friend sent me this text who's sober yesterday. He has this app. And I'm going to bash them on here. GoPuff. Have you heard of it? GoPuff. It's like an ordering service.
Yeah.
Okay. So they had an ad yesterday that was like something along the lines of, it's time to get back in the game and end that January dry spell, and with a wine emoji.
I hate it.
He sent me it and I was like, he was like pissed. And I was like, I'm irate. I will be making a post about this.
I'll be making a TikTok video.
Literally, I will be. But like a lot of companies were coming at dry January. Yeah, and I'm like, how can we as a culture be just so like naive to the fact that like dry January is encouraging people to take care of themselves a little differently, to try something new, to get honest with themselves about how alcohol shows up in their lives. But instead of like seeing it as such, we are upset that our revenue is going down and our business is being hurt. Like, I'm sure people will come back in a month, but give them the opportunity to try it out. Don't bash it.
I agree. And then there's this other crazy aspect to that, that a lot of these companies that are bashing it also have non-alcoholic stock in the game now and are making money off of Dry January as well. So like sometimes it's important for all of us, even me who doesn't drink, is to like really look at what I'm spending my money on and where they're using their dollars and like how they're voting, etc. Because I am like, I was thinking about this the other day. Ryan Reynolds owns a gin company and Blake Lively has a non-alcoholic fucking mocktail line. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, this is a money thing.
Yeah, it's just hopping on whatever feels like an investment opportunity. And then someone else brands it and does all of the stuff. I just got done watching The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and one of them owns like several tequila companies. And she's cool with it. But anyway, yeah, I feel like the hate has really come down for Dry January, but it's just because it's getting more popular. Like more and more people are trying it out. And it's also like, why would you tell someone if you've done this for 30 days? Like, would you do the same thing? It's super played out, but like, would you do the same thing with Coke? Would you do the same thing with heroin? Like, get right back on the wagon, like buy our products. And it just feels like people making a profit off people getting sick, which is a bummer. A total fucking bummer.
It's true.
Yeah.
I get it. It's a business. It's revenue. But like at the same time, like, can we be human and see it as like these people are taking an opportunity to see if they want more for themselves in their life? And like, let that be okay. And a lot of people now do moderate and do like drink on special occasions. That works for some people. And they found that they want to drink less because of Dry January. Like Dry January, I think, just is an opportunity to show people like, oh, I don't need to drink that glass of wine every day. Oh, I actually like having a Friday night in by myself. It shows people a different way of living. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to go sober, but I think it's just like we as a society have a long way to go on a cultural shift of like how we view people that are living a sober life instead of what's sad, but like big alcohol is like they see us as the bad guys because we're telling people like sobriety is fucking awesome and that is scary to them.
Yeah. And so last week, Alex, on the podcast, we had this co-founders of Parch, which is a mocktail, and they're fucking so cool. It was Rudy and Isla. Rudy's from Colombia and Isla's originally from Ireland. And so it was cool to hear their cultural like relationship with alcohol. But Rudy was diagnosed with cancer, and that's when he decided to stop working for Big Alcohol and to create his own mocktail line. So he's been alcohol free since his diagnosis, which is just so fucking beautiful. And it's interesting because Isla still, she's like she would consider herself like a conscious drinker. And she told us that the alcohol industry has not lost a dollar since the Sober Curious movement, that their revenue has gotten bigger. And so I thought that was a really interesting thing too. She said, well, they've just opened up more avenues and like ways to make money off of it. And legislation has actually worked opposite. It's actually becoming less, what's the word I want to use? It's become less like regulated in advertising and like nutrition wise, et cetera. It's actually becoming like a more loose area, which is insane to me as well.
Because the government's tied to it.
Yeah. I know, wait, are we going to start talking about conspiracy?
Yeah, for real. This podcast could very easily go in that direction, for sure.
Dude, I will say...
Don't quote me on that, but I'm just saying. I know.
It's true. I feel like we do really need to do a deep dive episode about government funding for like rehabilitation programming and how it's not being funneled there and it's being put in the general fund and it's being spent on multi-million dollar buildings and fucking like padding politicians' pockets.
Well, and like, I mean, big alcohol companies are now starting to buy NA beverage companies.
Yeah, exactly. It's all
such a bummer.
It's all related. It's just, I know.
Crazy.
Anyways, okay. So,
we could keep going down that tangent.
I know. How deep? I wanted to say something. I wanted to recognize you for a minute because it is so amazing to me and it's so expansive for everyone listening, especially since a lot of our listeners, I feel like, are between the ages of 22 and 32. Like we have like that, you know, decade. So a lot of us aren't moms. And it is so magical to hear from a sober mom with children that is doing so fucking much like life-giving and energizing work with the community. And so I just wanted to commend you for that. Like, how do you feel about juggling all of the hats that you wear? What does that feel like for you?
First, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It's a lot at times. I think one thing, I have a really supportive husband. He's also, you know, very honest with me of like, hey, Al, like, need you to rein it in a little bit here, but at the same time, he sees how passionate I am about this and helping people in sobriety. I mean, I also started a virtual sober group that meets on Wednesdays called the Free Spirits with my girlfriends. And like, So like Tuesday night, we have the Raw Dogs. Wednesday night, virtually, I have Free Spirits. And then when I'm leading Wildly Sober, that's Thursday night. So like three nights doing something for sobriety, but that is because I fucking love it. And I like really believe in it. And like doing this Wildly Sober this fall and seeing how I had six people, their lives were literally changed. I had a girl that did it and her girlfriend came up to me after, cause I knew her. And she came up to me and she's like, your program literally saved our relationship and how you helped to not just like navigate sobriety but life and empowered my spouse. And it's like, holy shit, if I can help people feel like excited about life again and like excited about the possibilities in sobriety, like that's what I want to do. And so in motherhood, I think about that a lot. Like, I was pregnant before I wanted to start my podcast in 2020, and then it didn't happen. And the pandemic then happened, and I had my daughter February 2020. And I feel like it was meant to be later, because like literally having her is a constant reminder of like, how would you want her to live her life? Would you want her to play small? Would you want her to stay in a box? Or would you want her to like go out and be a game changer and pave the path and lead the way and challenge what we know and empower other people and encourage people? And so like, I get emotional about it, but I think about that a lot. Like, she encouraged me to like, okay, like, what are you waiting for? Like, do it. You don't know how much time you have. Like, we are literally only guaranteed this one life. And like, we actually have no idea how long we're here for. So I want to start doing the things that I want to do. And I want to do them so that Clara and Griffin can grow up and be like, damn, my mom did all that stuff when we were really little. And I think one thing that's hard is I do feel like I'm navigating the shame and guilt that others put on me of like, don't you want to be at home with your kids? Or, you know, like, don't you want to like spend the night there? And I'm like, yes. And I also want to spend the night with other sober people. I want to cultivate connection. I want to challenge myself. I also want to recharge, and I want to go to that sound bath. And I don't want to feel guilty about taking time for me. And I want to show my kids that they can take time for themselves. They can do the things that they want to do. They can set the boundaries. And I think it's just being a mom has helped me as well in sobriety, because it's reminded me of like, I want to be the best mom that I can be. That means not drinking. That means pouring into my cup so that it's not empty. That means connecting with other people, adventuring. My husband and I try to do a trip, just the two of us, at least every year, and doing date nights. I would love for us to get to a point where we do them weekly. But like, honestly, right now I'm putting connecting with people and friends before our weekly date nights. That does not mean that I'm investing less in our relationship. It's just where I'm at right now is I want to be connecting with other people. And he and I, like, we have our connection time, and he spends time with his friends. And I don't know, I just, that was a long-winded answer, but I think finding what works for you, but knowing that like, you should never feel guilty for filling your own cup if you are a mom, and that as you step into motherhood, like, don't lose yourself in it. Because I think when I became a mom, it's like, just like sobriety, I found myself again. I found myself again in motherhood, and it looks different than other people. Mm-hmm. There is no one right way to do sobriety. There's no one right way to be a mom.
Yeah, I was going to say too that our daughter's 13. I'm a stepmom, but I hope that we're demonstrating four different perspectives for Iris, right? She comes back and forth between our house and our mom's house. And like, we all live such different lives, both of our moms and dads. And anyone else's bullshit projection of that shame or guilt, or don't you want to be doing this, or don't you want to be doing that? Like, I just want to tell you that I'm so excited that you're, you know, breaking that stigma for your kids. I think that that's fucking massive. That's so huge. And you're a whole ass person outside of motherhood too. I mean, it's a part of you, but it isn't who you are for any of us.
Totally. I think that's a really hard thing for moms, especially like as you become a new mom, is there's, I mean, like sobriety, there's a lot of mom content out there that make people feel guilty about how they're being a mom. I just saw a TikTok where this woman was like, I never want to spend a waking moment away from my mom or away from my kids. And like, people, to be fair, like, that is totally valid for her to feel that way. But the way that she went about it in her caption was like very much a guilt-ridden way. And it's like, that's amazing that you feel that way. I love my children, and I also love filling my time doing things that I enjoy, like recording this podcast tonight, like going to the gym and moving my body, like going on trips, doing dinners, watching the movie. Like, I think that that is really important personally, at least for me. Everybody is different, but taking the time for you, and as you step into motherhood, it's the hardest thing to figure out. because you feel this pull of like, I want to be with my kids and I want to go and do X, Y, and Z. And if I can give anybody advice on motherhood, it's do both. Go do the time with your kids, and then maybe you go to the gym a little bit later. Maybe you meet your friends. I will do anything that I can to see my friends. Like, there will be nights where I'm like, we'll put Griffin down. I'm going to go meet my friends at 8 p.m. Sometimes that's just how the cookie crumbles, and I have to be okay with that, you know? But it's also recognizing, like, it's important to me.
I really like that you use and so much. I had a mentor one time say that almost 100% of the time, it's not this or that. It's this and that. And I think that that rings so true in this particular conversation as well.
Totally. We actually, this is like kind of on topic, but kind of not. On our group on Tuesday, we were talking about feelings and emotions. And we were talking, the question was like, how do you want to feel in life? And one of my friends was talking about how someone had told her that she wants her to be joyful, to feel joy. And she was like, well, I do feel joy and I feel depressed. And we talked about how, like, you can feel both emotions at the same time. I can be happy while also and being sad. Like, I think sometimes we see somebody and they're so sad and we're like, I want you to be happy. And they can be like, I am happy and sad. Like, right now I am sad, but I am and happy. You know what I mean? Like, I think we have this hard time of imagining, like, duality. Like, there can be dualness in life. It doesn't have to be so black and white. And the more that we can start to talk about that and realize that, I think is really, really important.
Yes, I fucking love all of that. Okay, so Kaylee, why don't you, we're going to wrap it up here. I can't believe it's already been an hour and 10 minutes. So
we did, we like covered everything. And then we went in a government conspiracy tangent just a little bit, but I guess, I mean, all of the good shit is in process. Like, it's happening. You have the Dr. Phil, you have, what are you excited about, like, moving into year 9 of sobriety, and what are you, like, looking forward to this year?
I think for me within sobriety, I am really looking forward to just continuing to get to know myself and want to keep stepping out of my comfort zone. So just trying different things that I think will light me up or challenge me or teach me more about myself. And I don't know, I feel like I had a really busy year in 2022. I wouldn't change anything, but maybe also giving myself time and space to be okay with slowing down a little bit at times. But I think what's so cool is I just feel like I'm finding more and more connections to other people that are sober, which I absolutely love. And I just want to keep meeting more sober people or people that are sober curious and having the conversation about evaluating and getting curious about their relationship with alcohol. And like, if I can be someone that guides people to just even start looking at that journey, that would be really cool. So I don't know, I'm just excited for what's ahead and to hopefully empower more and more people in whatever they're seeking in their lives.
That's a big fuck yes. I feel like you're an expander even just for me. I want to be you. I'm obsessed.
Same. Yeah, I'm like, okay, yes, please. What advice would you have for someone who is like starting out their sober curious journey or has like hit a plateau in sobriety as someone, because you've been, you know, alcohol free for so long? Like, did you have any dead spots, and what would you pass along to someone else?
I think somebody that is just starting within sobriety, I think the biggest tip personally for me is finding a community that feels good to you. There's so many paths to sobriety, like so many different modalities that you can do, but being able to find a community that you can lean on and ask questions and navigate and like get a bunch of different viewpoints about sobriety and like challenges that you're facing or things that are coming up, it's like you literally grow more and more in your sobriety because of those people. Like in the Free Spirits, we have a WhatsApp chat and it's so cool. Someone will be like, oh my God, I'm going to my first bachelorette party this weekend, or I'm going to all inclusive for the first time. And like the responses of one, support, two, people that have been there and how they navigate it, and then like three, just people like being like, you're not alone, like I'm fearful about that too. It's like there is so much groundedness in that when you can find community. And that was something that I wish that I had more of people my own age. I had that in AA, but I didn't have anybody that like looked like right. me. I was 24 and everybody was at least a decade older than me, living very different lives. So like finding a community that feels aligned with you and like feels like they jive and live similar paths to you. And I think you have to be willing though to like put yourself out there a little bit. So like message me, message Kaylee, message Katie, like what are you seeking? Ask people that you see living an alcohol-free life, and I guarantee you they will direct you in multiple avenues of community. And if you've hit a plateau, so interesting, there's a few women in our group right now in Raw Dogs that are feeling that, and I like am trying to think about if I felt that, and I'm sure that I did. But for me, I think like when you hit a point in your sobriety where you're like, okay, like this is it, this is life, it's like coming back, at least for me, I have to constantly come back to like why I started. And that's a like fuel to the flame. And then also like trying something new. It's just like in life, like there will be moments in life where you feel like you have plateaued. And when you hit a plateau, like for me, I think it's a little bit of self-reflection. And then also go out on an adventure, go out, try something new. Maybe you go like do something fucking crazy, like jump out of an airplane. I don't know. But I think like try yeah. different things. But then also like being honest with yourself, like, is this a plateau in my sobriety? Is it a mental health thing? Really getting honest with yourself about like, what is it that I'm experiencing? What is it that I'm feeling within myself? And being willing to do some of the work, like talk to somebody about it. Ask a friend if they felt that. You do not need to go at that like feeling of like plateau of like, this is it alone. I think when you feel that, definitely leaning on other people, because that could be a really easy way to potentially be lean into like a trigger or a craving. And if that's something that you don't seek, like, it's okay to know that a lot of people feel that plateau. So put yourself out there a little bit and talk to somebody else about it.
Awesome. Super well said. Thank you. Well, where can people find you if they want to connect or just get more content, learn more about you?
I am on Instagram, Alexandra's Honor. I'm also on TikTok as Alexandra's Honor. I think I have Lucia on Instagram, Alexandra Lucia's Honor. That's my middle name. And then Creating Ripples podcast. Come check it out. Kaylee and Katie were just on. And yeah, I would love for you to let me know how this podcast impacted you. Ask me any questions. I'm an open book and I just love meeting new people. So I would love to connect.